Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our Inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune compounded of many things. A pioneer's carving roads through a forest wilderness. Defiant colonists signing a Declaration of Independence. The voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is Robert Fulton's first steamboat on the Hudson. And Ben Franklin flying a kite to study electricity. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. In the War of 1812, there occurred a brilliant and colorful chapter in America's history. It began in the fall of that year when Oliver Hazard Perry, 26-year-old master commandant, returned unhappily from an inspection of the gunboats of his command at Newport, Rhode Island.
Good morning, Captain Perry. How was the inspection, sir?
Like everything at this port, Mr. Turner, it went quietly and smoothly.
Well, what more could you wish, sir?
A gunboat flotilla? Nothing, I guess. Every one of the little ships is quite presentable, tied up at the pier. They'll probably spend the rest of the war just like that.
They're a fine defensive force, sir.
Yes, so they are. But who wants to command a flotilla that has no other mission than merely to ward off a British attack when, as and if it ever comes?
A defensive mission is very
important. I don't intend to sit out this war waiting for the enemy to attack me.
You don't, sir?
No. No, I must write the Navy Department. Since there's no immediate prospect of getting to sea in a sloop of war from this port, I shall request a transfer.
A transfer? Where, sir?
Doesn't matter. I even take lake service.
Lake service? But, sir, I've heard fearful stories about service on the Great Lakes.
And so have I. Some may be true.
Well, deep water sailors don't like it. Then there's always the lake fever.
Lake fever can't be any worse than this boredom. Ensign, fetch me quill, ink, and paper.
Yes, sir. Here they are, sir.
The Secretary, Navy Department.
In due time, the Navy Department acted upon his request, and Perry was ordered with some of his officers to report to Commodore Isaac Chauncey on Lake Ontario, who was in command of all lake operations. The war on land had gone against the American forces. Hull had surrendered Detroit to the British in 1812, and the following January, the American Army, commanded by General William Henry Harrison, seeking to recapture Detroit, had been defeated by the British on the Raisin River in Michigan. American spirits were at low ebb when in February 1813, Captain Perry reported to Commodore Chauncey aboard his flagship on Lake Ontario.
Commodore Chauncey, Captain Perry reporting for duty, sir.
Good morning, Perry. Glad to have you aboard. I've been looking forward to your arrival.
Yes, sir?
Got a job for you. A somewhat difficult job.
I shall do my best, sir.
Well, it may be a larger order than you expect. Come into my cabin. I'll outline it to you.
Very good, sir.
Sit down, Perry. Now, your job, Captain Perry, will be to regain control of Lake Erie. At present, we are exposed to attack by the British at many points. Once we regain control of the lake, that danger will be past, and General Harrison can be expected to attack the enemy in Canada.
Yes, sir, I understand. What ships are to be in my command, though, sir?
None, Perry.
None, sir?
None. At present. You'll have to build the ships for your lake squadron. You think you can do it?
Yes, sir.
We have a small fleet, 3 schooners, a brig, and a sloop. But they are in the Niagara River and useless to us now. The British at Fort George and Fort Erie have those ships bottled up.
I see, sir.
Maybe someday we will take those forts and those ships can be released to your command. But we can't count on it. We've got to build a whole new fleet, and we'll have to build it fast.
Yes, sir. Where are they to be built, Commodore?
At Presque Isle. Now, that's a little town on the lakefront in Pennsylvania.
How many ships is the enemy on Lake Erie, sir?
The British squadron numbers 6 ships, carrying 63 guns.
And how many ships are we to build?
2 large brigs to mount 20 guns each, and 3 or 4 smaller gun vessels.
Yes, sir. When does the Commodore wish me to start?
Right away, Mr. Perry. Now, I've a few ship's carpenters who came along when I left the New York Navy Yard. They're in charge of Mr. Joseph Blair. I'll lend them to you.
Thank you, sir. We'll start at once.
Oh, Perry. One thing I forgot to tell you.
Yes, sir?
I'm afraid you'll be on your own when it comes to finding sails and rigging, cannon and powder for your new ships.
Very good, sir.
Now, there's a small supply of seasoned lumber at Presque Isle, but most of the timber you'll need is still standing in the forest.
Yes, sir. We'll get it out, and we'll build the ships.
Mr. Blair, what is it?
This green lumber, sir. So fresh cut, not had time to cure proper.
What about it?
Well, I fear it'll rot out once the ships are on the lake.
You're using seasoned lumber for the keels?
Yes, sir. Keels of both rigs are laid, and, well, we've about enough of the great gun
vessel. Well, there must be some answer to green lumber. Jacob Pitkin? Come here a minute. Join me at the sheds here.
Yes, Captain Perry? What's bothering you?
It's this fresh-cut lumber. Won't it rot out once it gets into water?
That it will, Captain. That it will.
Now, what can we do about it?
Well, sir, I tell you, down east in Maine, we never were for worrying about it. We just let the lumber season good before we'd start building ships out of it.
But we are not in Maine. We're on Lake Erie, and we haven't the time.
That I know, sir. I tell you, the builders hereabouts have a trick they say will work. They salt the timbers.
Salt the timbers?
Yes, sir. They claim a vessel built of green lumber and used to carry salt stands up for years.
Shall we chance it, Captain Perry?
No, we've no choice. I hope it works, Mr. Pitkin.
I hope so, too, sir, but the natives do swear that...
Perry!
Yes, Mr. Turner, what is it?
The British fleet is just outside the harbor.
Oh, give me a glass, Mr. Turner.
Yes, sir.
Yes, there's activity on deck of the lead vessel. There's smoke of a gun being fired.
We're being bombarded, Captain.
So it would seem, but their first shot fell far short of land.
And so will they all, Captain. You see, they can't get near enough to do any harm.
Oh, how do you figure that, Mr. Pitkin?
Why, you see, there'll be a sandbar across the channel, about a mile out, and no warship can cross it.
Well, that's good news. Then we can build our ships without serious interruption.
That you can, sir. That you can.
Mr. Pitkin, I understand Pittsburgh is the nearest place to procure sails, rigging, cannon, and gunpowder?
Yes, sir, and that'd be a difficult job, Captain.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, there's not an old forest trail between here and Pittsburgh. No, it'll not be easy to haul things from there to here.
Yes, but it will have to be done.
Yes, sir. And if it pleases you, I'll be glad to go along. I know the trails like I know the coast of Maine.
Well, then you really know the trails, Mr. Pitkin.
Guided by Jacob Pitkin, Perry went to Pittsburgh and brought back, over almost impassable forest trails, the rigging, sails, cannon, powder, and shot needed for his new ships. Meanwhile, American forces had captured Fort George and Fort Erie, and the 5 ships bottled in the Niagara River then were free to sail down Lake Erie to Presque Isle, today known as Erie, Pennsylvania. Narrowly escaping capture by the blockading enemy, they finally made port safely and joined Perry's fleet. Late in May, the 2 20-gun brigs, the Lawrence and the Niagara, were launched, along with 3 smaller gun vessels. But the sandbar, which had been such a good ally during the building of the ships, now became a real problem. For should the American brigs go aground on that bar, those fine new ships would be sitting ducks for the British guns.
Captain Perry, the Lawrence draws a good 10 feet of water.
Very good, Mr. Blair. Thank you. Mr. Pitkin, how much water covers the sandbar?
Well, sir, when the lake be smooth, there'd be a mite less than 7 feet.
I see. And if we removed all the cannon to lighten the ship, how much would we gain?
Oh, maybe a foot, give or take an inch or so.
Well, that's not the answer then, is it? A ship drawing 9 feet can't very well be floated in 7 feet of water.
No, sir, that it cannot.
But
I've got a plan I think will work, providing we can get the enemy ships out of the way for a day or so.
Oh, and what is that, Captain Perry?
In due time, Mr. Pitkin. There's so many spies around, I dare not even think too much about it.
Aye, sir. It would not be good to have tales carried to the enemy.
That's not that I don't trust your mind, Mr. Pitkin.
No, sir, I understand. Even the bullocks have ears.
Captain Perry. Captain Perry, sir. There's salt in the hold of this ship.
So there is, Mr. Turner.
But, sir, what's it doing there? These vessels are to be kept clean and shipshape, sir.
And also afloat, Mr. Turner.
I don't understand, sir.
Well, I shall explain it to you sometime. Meanwhile, take my word, there's a good reason for that salt. And please help Mr. Blair over the side.
Yes, sir.
Captain Perry, Lawrence draws a good 10 feet of water.
So you said, Mr. Blair. The others?
Well, the Niagara draws about 9, and the smaller ship from 5 to 6 feet.
Oh, that's good. Then we shall have no trouble with the gun vessel.
No, sir. But, well, how about the Lawrence and the Niagara?
Everything will work out, Mr. Blair. Meanwhile, don't worry. And be careful not to talk about our ships to strangers.
Don't worry about me, Captain Perry. I worked too long for Commodore Chauncey at the New York Navy Yard.
Very well. In the meantime, gentlemen, we shall go about our business and wait. Patiently, I hope.
For weeks, the American fleet was landlocked by the sandbar. In order to get his ships across the bar, Perry knew that a windless day and mirror-smooth lake were essential. Also, the blockading British fleet must relax its vigil a bit. Then, on August 2nd, 1813, the commander of the British ships, Captain Barclay, Royal Navy veteran who had lost an arm at the Battle of Trafalgar with Lord Nelson, decided to accept an invitation to dine with a friend on the Canadian side. Abruptly, he ordered his squadron to sail northward over the choppy lake waters. He was quite certain the Yankees would not venture out when the lake was so rough. But 2 days later, on Sunday, August 4th...
Ah, Captain Perry, sir, this is a beautiful Sabbath morning.
Agreed, Mr. Turner.
There's scarcely a breath of air stirring. The lake is as smooth as a mirror.
Ah, of course, Mr. Turner, this is it. This is the day we cross that sandbar.
Cross the sandbar? But, sir, most of the officers and men are ashore.
No, pass the word quietly. The officers and men will return to their respective ships at once. Caution everyone that secrecy about our plans is of utmost importance. There are spies all about.
Yes, sir. At once, sir.
Mr. Pitkin? You have the 4 scows ready?
Aye, Captain.
Cannon have been removed from the Lawrence and the Niagara?
They've been landed on the beach. 40 in all, shotted and loaded as they were.
How much did it lighten the ships?
Well, as calculated, each brig draws a good foot less of water.
Good. We'll have the Lawrence and Niagara towed to the deepest water in the harbor. Have a scow placed on either side of the large ships.
Aye, sir.
Sink each scow to the water's edge. Run heavy timbers through the forward and after ports, and then block these timbers on the scows.
And then, sir?
Well, replace the plugs in the scows and pump out the water. These floating foundations should raise the ships enough to clear that bar.
Aye, sir.
By 2 o'clock that Sunday afternoon, the Lawrence had been towed to deep water. The large scows placed alongside and Perry's plan carried out. The brig was lifted a good 2 feet by this process. But at dusk, when she got on the bar, it was found she still drew too much water. It was necessary to repeat the entire process, to sink the scows again, to block up the timbers higher, and to pump out the scows. This operation occupied the entire night. The schooners crossed the bar easily and were moored outside, ready to repel any attack. Fortunately, the Niagara crossed on the first trial. At 8 o'clock next morning, as the Lawrence was just passing the bar...
A few yards more, and we'll be safe across the sandbar.
Aye, Captain. And a long, nice work it was.
With our sails hoisted, we can cut loose from the towing barge. Give the order, Mr. Turner.
Aye, aye, sir.
Cut loose the tow line! Sail ho!
Well, away!
Shore by lee!
Quick, Mr. Turner, your glass.
There are 3... No, 4 sails. That's the enemy fleet. Come back.
Not a cannon on board this ship yet. Mr. Pitkin, signal the small boats to pull alongside with our cannon as fast as possible.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Turner, signal the schooners Trip and Summers to open fire on the British vessels.
The enemy is out of range, sir.
I know it. I want to keep him that way, Mr. Turner, until we've got our cannon on board.
Aye, aye, sir. I'll signal at once.
Mr. Pitkin, as soon as the small boats come alongside the Lawrence, prepare to hoist the guns into place. Ports at first.
Aye, sir. It shall be done.
Mr. Yarnall?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Yarnall, come here, please.
Yes, Captain Burke.
See, Arnell, as each cannon is put in place, I want it manned, ready for firing.
Aye, aye, sir.
We may have to fight this ship with only half its guns, but we'll do a job of it.
The Trip and Summers have opened fire, sir. The shots are falling short.
Good. What may seem like a futile cannonade, at least we'll keep the British at a distance until we're ready.
Perry's squadron finally was made ready for the battle. The enemy remained for a time sullenly reconnoitering. Then abruptly, the British upped all sails and went up the lake under a press of canvas. On August 18th, Perry received on board a number of soldiers and volunteers, and he then sailed in quest of the enemy. The squadron cruised for several days when Perry was taken ill with the lake fever. Lieutenant Yarnall, second in command, ordered the vessels into Put-In Bay, a harbor among some nearby islands. By September 10th, Perry had almost completely recovered from the fever.
Good morning, Captain Perry. You're looking better, sir.
I'm feeling better, Mr. Turner. Lake fever is a strange thing. It takes everything out of you for a time, but it doesn't seem to have any serious after effects.
Sail ho! Six sails to the Norwest!
This may be the enemy, Mr. Turner. I hope it is.
Yes, sir. Do you want my glass?
Thank you.
Is it the British, sir?
It is, Mr. Turner. The entire British squadron. Mr. Yarnall, assemble all hands on deck.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Turner, hoist the signal flag for all vessels to get underway immediately. They shan't get away this time.
Aye, aye, sir.
Captain, all hands present, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Yarnall. Men, this ship we stand upon is named the Lawrence. To honor the memory of a great and gallant sailor, Captain James Lawrence of the Chesapeake. On this blue battle flag are the dying words of Captain Lawrence. Don't give up the ship. I propose to hoist it to the main royal masthead. May it be an inspiration to all of us in our encounter with the enemy. I trust this meets with your approval.
Aye, aye, aye.
Whisper of a breeze, Captain Perry.
If it holds, we're all right, Mr. Yarnall. Signal Lieutenant Elliot on the Niagara that I shall take the Lawrence in to engage the enemy flagship. Confound it. What's the matter with those schooners astern? They're not moving up as I ordered.
It's a lack of a good wind, sir. They can't keep up with
us. Have them crowd on more canvas, Mr. Yarnall.
They're carrying all they've got, sir. There's something else to be considered, Captain.
Yes, what's that, Mr. Yarnall?
Well, sir, it's been my experience that once cannonading begins, the air is still.
I know that, but it's a chance we have to take. Our squadron is committed to battle.
Yes, sir. And I do hope the breeze holds.
But Yarnall's worst fears were realized. As soon as the cannon started firing, all wind disappeared and the air became deathly still. Equipped with longer guns, the British concentrated their fire on the American flagship and inflicted terrible damage, while the American vessels found no breeze to move them close enough for their short guns to be effective.
Our last gun but one has been knocked out, Captain.
What's wrong with the last gun?
Nothing, sir, except that the crew has almost been wiped out.
And you and I and Mr. Yarnall shall help fire it. Gunner?
Yes, sir.
Is the powder charge in place?
Yes, sir, a double charge.
Yarnall, load the shot.
Aye, aye, sir.
Here, hand me a fuse, please.
Yes, sir.
For this shot, I send greetings to Captain Barclay of His Majesty's Navy.
You've scored a hit, Captain. A solid hit on the deck of the Detroit.
And our last gun was cracked in doing it.
What's to be done now, sir?
Well, we can't fight without guns, so we shall go to a ship which has them, the Niagara.
You intend to be rowed over to that ship, sir?
Better than staying here, Mr. Yarnall.
Yes, sir, I shall have a boat lowered immediately.
And, Mr. Yarnall, please get our blue battle flag. I intend to take that with me to the Niagara. All All right, Mr. Yarnell, cast off.
Aye, aye, sir.
Cast off the bow line. Cast off the stern line. Now pull, man, pull. Pull for the Niagara.
Where are our losses in the Lawrence, Mr. Yarnell?
Last count, 22 killed, 61 wounded. Many severely, sir.
How many sound men still aboard?
14, sir. Oh, that was closer.
Still missed us.
Should we try a zigzag course?
No, then we might accidentally get in the way of an enemy shot. Continue a straight course to the Niagara.
Aye, aye, sir. Captain Perry, if you'll excuse the suggestion, sir, I don't think it's wise to stand up in the boat, sir.
Oh? Why not, Mr. Yarnell? The lake's perfectly smooth. I'll not fall overboard.
It's not that, sir. You're a perfect target.
So are we all, Mr. Yarnell. No, the enemy is directing his fire at this boat, not at me or any other one person. There you see, Mr. Yarnell. They've aimed for where we were. If we can keep ahead of them, we're all right.
Yes, sir.
All right, men. Faster on those oars.
Side of Niagara, Captain Perry. We're going to make it, sir.
Did you have some doubt, Mr. Yarnell?
No, sir. Only a rowboat isn't the safest place to be during a battle.
Agreed. I prefer a larger ship, too. Hail the Niagara.
Aye, aye, sir.
Ahoy the Niagara! Captain Perry is coming aboard!
Well, they seem glad to see us.
They should, sir. It's a miracle that we made it, Captain Perry.
Well, we had to make it, Mr. Yarnell. Only to keep faith with Captain Lawrence's flag.
Although every gun in the British squadron appeared trained on the six-oared rowboat, the transfer across the open water to the Niagara was completed. Miraculously, neither Perry nor any of his men was hit during the 15-minute trip. Aboard the Niagara, Perry conferred with his second-in-command, Lieutenant Elliott. Elliott volunteered to take the rowboat and to carry Perry's orders to the smaller vessels astern. He passed within hailing distance of all these ships and ordered them to close to within half pistol shot of the enemy and then to throw in grape and canister.
Ah, that breeze has sprung up. Not much, but it will enable us to close with the enemy.
Yes, sir. What course, sir?
Sail straight toward the center of the British fleet.
Toward the center, sir.
Yes, we shall try to separate the lines. We've taken a beating at long range. Now maybe we shall see how the enemy likes the feel of American shot at close range.
Aye, aye, sir.
Port your helm!
Aye, aye, sir.
Signal the other vessels to follow us in.
Aye, aye, sir.
The Niagara bore down on the head of the British line and crossed the course of the two leading ships, the Queen Charlotte and Detroit. The Niagara's guns raked the vessels fore and aft, and the effect of this fire at close quarters was devastating. Straight down the English line went the Niagara. Running astern of the Lady Prevost, she delivered a terrific broadside and then bore up toward the Hunter. The Niagara settled down to the grim task of smashing the enemy into surrender. Following the Niagara, the other American ship sailed briskly into the midst of the enemy fleet. So furious was the fire they delivered at close quarters that the British sailors were driven from their guns. Never had American guns fired faster or with more deadly effect. 15 minutes after the breeze had sprung up.
Captain Perry, look. An officer in the Queen Charlotte. He's waving a white handkerchief back to the boarding pike.
I see it, Mr. Ryanell. Captain Barclay in the Detroit is striking his colors.
Every ship in the enemy squadron is striking, Captain. We've won.
So we have, Mr. Yarnell. I shall reboard the Lawrence and receive the surrender there.
Captain Perry, I herewith surrender His Majesty's ships, the Detroit, Queen Charlotte, Lady Prevost, Hunter, Chippewa, and Little Belt.
Very good, Captain Barclay.
May I say, sir, that in all my career with the Royal Navy, I have never seen guns fired faster or more accurately.
Well, that's understandable, Captain Barclay. An American's life has long depended on his ability to shoot accurately. You are excused, sir. Now, I must dispatch a message to General Harrison. Mr. Yarnell, my cap, if you can find it.
There it is, sir.
Thanks. Have you a piece of paper?
Why, no, sir, I haven't.
Never mind. The back of this letter will do. We have met the enemy, and they are ours. Two ships, two brigs, one schooner, and one sloop.
By Perry's magnificent victory on Lake Erie, Americans were free to transport troops by water where and when they were needed. By October 5, 1813, nearly all of the right wing of the British Army in Canada had laid down their arms. The English evacuated Detroit and with it Michigan. So the great Michigan territory, which had been lost to the enemy by American land forces, was regained by the Navy. For his conduct in this battle, Oliver Hazard Perry received a gold medal from Congress and was made permanent captain of the line. The Battle of Lake Erie has long been considered one of America's proudest achievements on water. And those nine words into which Perry compressed his report, "We have met the enemy and they are ours," have gone down in history as the model of what a hero's dispatch should be. A thrilling part in our inheritance. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the past National Commander of the American Legion, Mr. Paul V. McNutt.
From July 23rd to July 30th, one of the most exciting educational projects in this country takes place on the campus of the University of Maryland at College Park, when 97 boys attend Boys Nation, an American Legion-sponsored youth activity. These boys have been selected from some 20,000 youths who have attended the American Legion Boys State programs throughout the United States, where they learned how American representative government works through participation. Joint projects of the Legion's Americanism Commission, Boys State, and Boys Nation are designed to encourage knowledge of the democratic process and an appreciation of the privileges, rights, and responsibilities of the citizens of this republic. The program employs a government laboratory technique. Textbooks are relegated to a place of secondary importance as the boys form their own political parties, hold elections, install officers, enact and enforce laws, and personally live through the experience of representative government in a learn-by-doing situation. The American Legion has always believed that one of the most effective ways of safeguarding the United States from communism, fascism, and in fact all totalitarian doctrines is to encourage a greater knowledge of our own government, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. A deeper appreciation of our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Paul V. McNutt. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history, to a time when Americans dreaming of the future forged that which we possess today. Today's story, Victory on Lake Erie, was written by Ted Weir and featured Lamont Johnson as Captain Oliver Hazard Perry. Included in the cast, in order of their appearance, were Paul Dubov, Howard Culver, Jack Carroll, Robert Easton, Herb Ellis, Richard Peel. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Wall speaking. Another personality in the news will meet the press tonight on the NBC Radio Network.